Blog Talk Radio. You know, if Lars wasn't such a dick, I'd really like them a lot.
Yeah. I would.
Like, if he wasn't just such a cock. I told you that story about how I was at the publicist's office.
Oh, yeah.
And Lars called over. Have I told this
on the show? No.
No.
Fucking used to love Metallica so much.
So, yeah. Oh, so did I especially until this day.
Yeah.
So I'm at this PR office that I'll leave unnamed, and Lars Ulrich is promoting something, which I'll also leave unnamed. And Lars is having a problem communicating with his PR people. The PR people want to put him on Howard Stern. And Lars is like, Howard is a good guy. He played a record of ours back in the 70s. I'll do Howard. And then, I'm sorry. He won't do Howard. He'll do like Kiss FM because they played a record of his back in the 70s. And this girl really wants him to do Howard. And it's just like 24-year-old, fresh, out of college, got a job at a big PR firm in Hollywood girl. And she has to take this phone call. And she's like, but Mr. Ulrich, I got you on the Howard Stern show. Which, if you're a PR person, I imagine that's a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
It's Howard. He just had Lady Gaga on yesterday. He has Bill Murray on. He has, like, all these people that are impossible gets. And he has Lady Gaga on, like, twice a year now. That's how Howard is.
Yeah.
Lars goes, I ain't going to fucking do Howard. He didn't play my record back in 1983. I mean, you got to remember, this is last year. This is 2013. And Lars is holding this grudge from, like, 83 that he wouldn't play whatever garbage piece of shit song Lars is upset about. This girl is almost in tears. She's like, I'm going to have to explain to my boss why you won't do Howard and why the only show you'll do is this little radio station in L.A. that gets no play anywhere. He goes, I don't care. They played my records. Like, he's so loyal. In a way, I like it because he's so loyal to the little guys that played his records, who, by the way, though, within 30 years have probably changed management, probably changed corporations.
Corporation, station format, sound.
It's probably not the same people that made your record.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Not Rick Dees, bro.
Yeah.
And Howard, he won't do Howard because 1 year that his record came out, Howard wouldn't play it. And he's
How does
making
he remember
this
that?
Girl cry. And her boss comes in the office
and
she's
like... And she got in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, she did. Her boss comes in the office and goes, what's wrong? And she goes, nothing. And her boss is like, was that Lars? And she's like, yeah. And she's like, make sure you get him on everywhere. And this girl, I could just tell she's about to like burst into tears again.
Yeah.
Because she was just yelled at by her boss, get him on everywhere, when he basically just said he won't do anything that didn't play his record 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I felt so bad for this girl. And Lars was such a dick. He's like, I will not do no fucking Howard Stern. I'm like, wow, this is what these little girls go through. I feel so awful for them.
No wonder they get coke habits and they try to take their husbands for all they're worth in L.A.
By the way, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. I'm suffering from a little bit of a cold, and I don't have my hot tea. I'm going to have to go get a hot tea while we play the Paul Wesley interview. But where are we? We're on iTunes. You can go to iTunes. Oh, Facebook. Go to Facebook. Go to the search bar. Type in the Matthew Aaron Show. Then you're going to click like, and then you will get all our updates and information there. We actually do very well on Facebook.
Yes.
Yesterday on Twitter, I was live tweeting the Sons of Anarchy pre-series finale, the penultimate episode.
Uh-huh.
And then, and that was fun. And then, what else are we on? We're on iTunes, where you can subscribe.
At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter.
Right.
Just discussing. And then Stitcher.
Yeah, Stitcher. But if you go to iTunes and subscribe, it just goes to your phone or your laptop or your iPod, and you don't even have to remember to download. It'll creepily end up on your phone.
It'll be there.
Yeah, you'll hear my voice one day.
It'll keep resurfacing like herpes.
Yeah, right. And then, we're on Stitcher as well with Corolla and Marin and all those goons. And
you know, we're with those guys. No big whoop.
No big whoop, actually.
Yeah,
all.
Actually, no big whoop.
No. And then what else are we on? Anything else? But the best place to listen to the show is www.thematthewaronshow.com. And today we are joined by Paul Wesley, star of The Vampire Diaries, who has a new movie coming out, Before I Disappear. I know all the women have gone fucking batty over this interview, so we'll have that for you in a few minutes.
Are we going to have a lot of young demographic listeners here today?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know how many of them are going to want to be PR people.
No,
they
won't.
If they listen to the whole show, but they won't. They'll just tune in for the interview.
Well, no. How many girls do you know, though, that went into PR in college? I know a lot.
Well, really?
My sister, Anthony's sister. Maybe it's just because I know a ton of PR people now that I feel like I know a million PR people.
Okay.
It feels like every girl I meet in Chicago went into PR.
Yeah.
They work in public relations.
Okay.
I would avoid it. I think all the PR women that I've dealt with, and most of them are women, a few of them men, but I think they would tell you it's a very hard job. It's very hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
I remember we had my high school reunion. Lee Capreas, at Al Capreas on Twitter. We had my high school reunion, and somebody told me they were marketing for McDonald's.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just wanted to be like, God, that is rough. That's a rough job. They are not an easy company to work for, and you have to market McDonald's.
Yeah, right.
To people is the job.
Right. You have to sell that bullshit.
I know.
Oh, that's
got
to be the worst job ever.
I couldn't do that.
No, neither could
I. Almost reacted like, you know, Bill Hicks, like, ooh, you should kill yourself. You know, like,
yeah, right.
I wanted to say it, but I'm like, don't say that at your high school reunion.
By the way, I've had like the longest week ever because I
did you get all your Christmas shopping?
Oh, so Lenny picks me up at like 3 a.m. We make it downtown. We're staying at the Hilton. We park at the Hilton. We're walking around. It's like 10 degrees out. We're walking around. This is like per usual, though. And we end up going to Bloomingdale's, I think, first. Yes. We go do the Bloomingdale's, the Tavana. We do, you know, you got to get your morning tea. There is nobody at the high-end retail joints at like 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that has Bloomie money or anyone that has Water Tower Place money is not at 6 a.m.
Right.
They don't get out until like noon.
Right.
So we do some shopping. Then we go to Lux Bar for breakfast. That's where the drinking started at like 8:30.
Yeah.
And they're doing like brandy shots and everything. And I'm like, no, I'm not drinking. I'm gonna be slow and steady wins the race on this one.
Yeah.
Then we end up at Rosebud at like 11:30. We get fucking shit faced. I had two glasses of Koval at Rosebud to start. And Koval, for those that don't know, it's a grain whiskey.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's great.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. I love Koval. It's great. After this weekend, I'd say I'm a Koval guy more than a Jack. I'd rather have Koval than Jack.
Yeah.
Then we went to every 4-star hotel you can think of. We went to the Intercontinental. That's where we started. Then the Peninsula. Then the Waldorf Astoria. Then the Sofitel. That, you know, we're all over the place. People are doing blow. People are doing, like, shot after shot after shot after shot after. We are hammered. And then it's like 3 p.m. Is there weather today outside or something? Am I just having a bad connection today?
What's with the connection here?
Nah, this is the good connection that we're on.
What about the GarageBand? I just said that I don't know what.
The GarageBand won't do anything. Well, yeah, I'll have the full audio later because of GarageBand, but this is weird.
What's weird?
I haven't dealt with this. I don't know.
All right.
What were you eating, by the way? Oh, Snyder's?
Snyder's.
Oh, that's so bad for you, bro.
I know.
Oh, you ate the whole bag, too? You bought a whole bag of honey mustard and onion and ate it?
I did.
Bro, that's like 1,000 calories. I'm not even screwing around.
Really? Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You're supposed to eat, like, this is what I found out about pretzel bags. We'll get back to the story. But pretzel bags, what I found out is you're supposed to eat, like, 7 of them at a time.
Okay.
And that's, like, 200 calories.
Okay.
I didn't know this for a long time. I didn't know this until I got diabetes and I started dieting. And then I started looking at serving sizes on everything.
Well,
okay,
again,
so a bag of Snyder's, serving size, 8. There's 8 per container, okay?
Uh-huh.
8 servings in this thing. Now, you and I look at this and we're like, that's one TV show, right? There's 8. That's why I won't eat this anymore, because I'm like you, where in one TV show, I'll eat the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
The whole bag, like
I
you
never
just
do,
did.
But
the, there's like 4 left. You're like, I left some for Mikey.
You know what's funny? I've been watching what I eat lately. No more drive-through. I haven't had any fast food in 30 days.
That's good.
And all that. One drink a day. I've been drinking one drink a day. One drink.
One Koval.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy. I just went to town on it.
Yeah. There's so for people at home, you're eating those Snyder's or those, what else are there, like Lay's or Doritos, any of that shit. And you look at the back, and it always says 8 serving sizes. And that huge fucking bag in your hands. It's a huge bag.
Yeah.
And you look on the back, and you're like, one serving size. So that means 1/8 of this bag. Literally what you have left in this. Not even. I don't even know if this is an 1/8, but it's really close. So like that much of the bag. So from my hand to the bottom of the bag is 140 calories.
Jesus.
60 calories of fat and 15% of your allotted saturated fat per day.
Uh-huh.
It's unreal.
Jeez.
I'd eat the whole bag. I'm not even criticizing you. I would eat the whole thing.
I was at the gas station. I always gas up at Thornton's when I come here because the gas is the cheapest.
Yeah.
And I never get
it
them anymore.
It is the cheapest. It's like $2.60 today, or $2.70
with
something,
snack,
right?
With, yeah, and I'm friends with the nice old broad there.
Oh, she is nice. I get my lotto from
she's
her.
She's so sweet. When I snack, I'm like a cheese and crackers, nuts and seeds type of snack.
Yeah, you are. You're right.
I'm not a chips, cookies, and ice cream snacker. I like those things.
You're right.
But, man, I just went to town on this fucker.
No, I mean, I'm not even trying to give you shit. I'm just like, isn't it amazing?
It's amazing.
How shitty that is for you.
It's unbelievable.
I'm eating yesterday. I'm watching Sons of Anarchy. I'm watching the penultimate episode at like 4 a.m. And I hadn't eaten like all day. And because I was editing, and that's what I was getting to after this story, too, was I was between editing and doing this pilot and doing another movie. We were talking about how, like, American Airlines wouldn't give me a part-time gig. I applied for a part-time job, and they wouldn't give it to me basically because of my career in Hollywood, because I'm getting paid by a studio to do a pilot, and because I got all this stuff going on. They're like, why the fuck would you apply at American Airlines? And I'm like, yeah, that's a good question. But probably because I like not doing everything in my life Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay? And I get why they wouldn't hire me. I got it. But we were talking about how, like, all our friends think they get a 6-minute set at the Laugh Factory,
yeah,
and they're famous.
They think they're famous.
I sold the pilot. I have another pilot that we're selling, and I got 2 movies that I'm making right now. One's edited. One I'm editing, and we have to do a reshoot on a day of. And then another one that we're doing next year. And I don't think I'm famous at all. I'm applying for jobs at American Airlines.
Right. right.
And we were just talking about how funny that is. So anyways, Friday. We're
so
out.
The Waldorf Astoria bartender
is
being
great,
rude.
Yeah. He's being rude. He's being a dick. So we're at the Waldorf Astoria on Friday. And I guess this guy's being a dick. And I'll tell you something. Nice hotel.
Yeah.
You might as well finish the bag now.
I know.
It's like 7 of them left.
I'll do it during the interview.
It's like when you eat 7 pieces of an 8-piece pizza and
yeah,
you leave that last slice. You're like, listen, I'm on a diet.
Yeah, right.
I'm cutting back. You might as well just finish her off.
I know. It's one handful in there. I'm going to make it happen.
So, yeah, we're at the Waldorf. By the way, the nicest hotel I went to was the Sofitel, which then I booked the suite, the presidential suite,
Jeez.
For New Year's Eve.
Oh, wow.
So you're welcome if you want to chip in and stay over.
I would do that.
Because I wanted to be near the Viagra Triangle.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't want to stay at the Thompson. I'm like, we got the presidential. I feel good about that. It's an expensive room.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Sofitel was the nicest one I was at, is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. The Godfrey was nice. The Intercontinental. Here's the thing about the Intercontinental and the Waldorf Astoria and the Peninsula. Man, it is white.
Yeah, it's really white.
I can't do it.
What about the Drake? Did you go to the Drake?
I love the Drake. I've stayed at the Drake. I got a suite at the Drake. They have no suites for New Year's Eve. That's the only reason we're not at the Drake on New Year's Eve.
Of course.
And you're like, people at home are like, oh, he has to get a suite. Well, there's going to be like five bros, okay? So, and two of them are very hefty.
Yeah.
Once you see my first film, Bromance, you'll understand who these five bros are
right.
and why we need a presidential suite to hold us all.
Yeah, you got 1,000 pounds a man on screen at some points in this movie, okay?
Well, you know, I'm editing this movie, and I'm like, it's a lot of dude.
Yeah.
You can almost, like, smell the locker room
yeah.
on the other end of the computer while I'm editing.
It's
oof.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but the Peninsula and the Waldorf and the Intercontinental, and look, I'm white, so I'm not insulting us white people, so don't sit back and be like, oh, here comes a race thing. It's just, I don't know about you white people, but for me, when a place is too white, when a place is too, like, upper-class white,
mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't fit in. I don't. Like, I feel like I'm wearing the wrong polo shirt.
I know. I suddenly become John Belushi. I'm like, what am I doing here? They're all looking
yeah,
at me.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I need a little color in my places where I hang out.
Yeah.
I need it. I really do.
it's not too much to ask.
Like, you go to the Intercontinental, and they have Michael Jordan's Steakhouse there,
yeah.
right? Good food. Michael Jordan's is actually really good. I mean that.
Mm.
Bottom of my heart. It's on Michigan. It's a cool place. How come I'm at Michael Jordan's, and of course there's Asians there, but how come I'm at Michael Jordan's, but there's not one black person to be found anywhere? You're Michael Jordan's. I want to see someone of color at this restaurant.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Yeah.
And I don't. And I'm bored. I'm like, wow, I'm sitting around with all these fucking white people.
Yeah.
It's boring.
More white people than when I saw Wu-Tang at,
right.
at Riot Fest this year.
Isn't that funny how
Isn't that amazing?
Works? Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I went to a Wu-Tang thing in L.A. And the... Was there any black people there? No.
None.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. I had to think about this. There were zero. I went to one in L.A. and it was...
He came out and he was like, what's up, white people?
Yeah. And it was... Yeah, it was all white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing, though. My favorite thing was I'm thinking about, like, the Waldorf, and I'm thinking about the Peninsula, and I'm thinking about all these nice hotels we went to. And then I'm like, oh, at the Intercontinental, there was Asians. But then I'm like, oh, wait, the Michael Jordan restaurant's there.
Right, of course.
What is with Asians and Michael Jordan?
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, what is with that?
I don't know. They
love, first of all, Asians love basketball.
They love the Mag Mile.
They love basketball and the Mag Mile.
Yeah.
So it's like two for two.
They're taking pictures, right. and they are those are like stereotypical Asian tourists, pictures
yeah.
of everything,
yeah.
all that stuff, hats. And, yeah, Michael Jordan is like probably the most recognizable person from Chicago that they would know.
So,
it?
Yeah. So we're at the Waldorf. We're at the bar. It's a really boring bar. It's just boring. The place is boring. You'll spend every bill at all these high-end places was $180.
Yeah.
So I'd pick up a round somewhere. It cost me $1.80. Len would pick up a round. It cost $1.80. Marty would pick up a round. Cost him $1.80. So we spend asshole money at all these places. And, yeah, the Waldorf was just really boring and bland, and this guy was being a dick. Like, he didn't want us to be there. We did not fit in, okay? We were
yeah.
the loud Chicago, Da Bears,
good.
Beer swilling, more like Coke up.
Yeah.
that's
nice.
Noah.
Somebody treated.
I'm saying that's how we looked. And they treated us like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm passing out, so I don't really care. And so we leave.
We don't carry Schlitz here, sir.
So we're like, all right, we're just going to not tip this guy.
Okay.
Well, get this.
Mm-hmm.
At the Waldorf, they either smelt this coming or they didn't trust us that much because they put an automatic tip on the bill.
Oh, man. They knew it. They knew it. That, you know,
they're like, these guys are scumbag central.
That probably happens a lot, though. Some crass jackasses will come in there, and they have money, but they don't act like it.
Yeah, you
and
would think.
And they probably automatically do that. What a dick.
Yeah.
Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Waldorf sucks. We leave the Waldorf, and Lenny and I are like, we got to go get a nap in.
Yeah.
But Lenny and I are like, but we're fucking hungry. We didn't eat since breakfast. And this was at like 4 o'clock. We're like, I'm dying right now.
Yeah.
So I order and have delivered Bari to the hotel. Now, for those that know about Bari and
Bari?
Where Bari's located, not really close to the Mag Mile.
No.
Like if you're a driver. So I order four foot-long Baris. With Parma prosciutto. Like, I went all out. I'm like, we're gonna get the subbiest sub that ever subbed the land. And Lenny and I are like, oh, Bari, this is great. But we have like an hour to kill because it's going to take this guy like an hour. No, it turns out it takes this guy like 10 minutes, even though he said it was going to take an hour. And Lenny and I are stuck at the fucking CVS nearby or whatever waiting. And
the guy's waiting at the hotel.
Yeah, he's at the hotel. He's like, sir, I have your Bari sub. Would you like to come by and get it, man? And I'm like, oh, this poor little dorky white dude sitting with my Bari subs right now in our expensive hotel waiting for us. And we look like assholes. We're at Walgreens buying Totino rolls, and Lenny got like Lean Pockets. I'm like, look at Lenny. I'm like, Lenny, I just ordered four subs. You got a thing of Lean Pockets. You got a thing of Totino's rolls. You have a whole Pringles thing of Buffalo Pringles. Why'd you get all this extra food? He goes, you never know. You need snacks in the middle of the night, whatever. I'm like, okay.
Oh, fat
sure.
Fucks.
That's so fat.
I know.
So fat.
And to do that, you went on this binge of these nice nice places, these nice bars, the top shelf
binge.
Foods.
Binge.
And Lean Pockets. Is
yeah, right.
Still never far away.
Like assholes. And so, yeah, we go do that. And then we finally get to the hotel, and this guy calls again. He's like, hey, man, I'm here with your Baris. You mind if I just, like, chill in the lobby? Like, I could use the break. I'm like, yeah, do whatever, dude. Yeah, we'll be right there, blah, 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 no big deal. We get there. This guy who was on the phone, who's, like, the whitest dude ever, is the blackest dude from DePaul University of all time.
Uh-huh.
Dude, he is, like, if you would have saw him, you would have been like, holy shit, you hear him talk. If you were blind, you'd think he was the whitest dude ever.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, hey, man, what's going on, bro? Blah, 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 blah.
Was he
like
British?
Surfer dude white. No.
Wow.
No, like surfer dude white.
I've never heard that.
The blackest dude you'll ever meet.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so funny. I loved it. I almost tried to, like, invite him up to
he
a
was
room
using
to hang
the,
out.
He
I
was
liked
using
him
the word
much.
Totally, like words
yeah,
that black people
yeah,
never use.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But then I saw he went to DePaul, and I'm like, it all makes sense.
Yes.
So that was Friday. And then Friday night, we went to Boho for dinner, Bohemian food.
Uh-huh. I know Boho.
We went to Centro for second dinner. We went to... So at Boho, they ordered the entire menu, and all I got was the donuts and coffee gelato.
Uh-huh.
Very small portion, probably a couple hundred calories. And I go, we're going to have to eat at Centro, and I'm saving my, like, A game for pasta because that's going to fill me the fuck up.
Right.
And I'm with Calabrese at this point. She came by, and Calabrese and I are like, Melissa and I are like, yeah, let's save it for Centro. So she barely eats anything. I barely eat anything. We go to Centro. We get big, huge things of pasta that cost like, that bill was like $200.
Jeez.
We get hammered at Centro. Had two more martinis there. I mean, this was Friday. I got so drunk. I ended up going home at 1:30. A stretch white limousine picked up Terzo and I and took us home. And it was the loneliest limousine ever. Like, I took a picture and put it on Facebook. It's like, you look all the way down, there's nobody there. It's like the ghost town of limousines. I'm like, wow, we look like we're the worst partiers ever. And Terzo's like, you know, I really don't like limousines, though. I'm like, oh, why don't you like limousines, Terzo? He goes, well, you know, there's just not a lot of leg room to, like, you know, you sit down and I got to spread out. And I'm like, oh, God. Only Terzo would bitch about a stretch limousine.
A stretch limo.
Only Terzo. And it's like a brand new, really nice stretch limo.
Yeah.
Only Terzo would bitch about it. Ever. I don't get him. He's the only person I know that can bitch about.
He's just doing that to do it.
You know,
I think.
I'm not a really big fan of the Waldorf Astoria. It's
just no legroom.
Yeah, it's just too expensive. It's too much of the nicest shit on the planet. Yeah, only you can bitch about that.
Right.
Me, I bitch about how white it is. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit back and say it's not the nicest place you ever fucking seen in your life.
Yeah.
So that happened. Friday night, where'd we go? We ended up going to Mercer, party there. People are like, this is the longest story ever. And that was Friday.
That's insane.
Saturday, we wake up and...
Wait. The sandwiches, the Lux, the Boho, and the Centro was all one day?
And shopping.
That was one day.
That was one day. Saturday, we wake up and we go to breakfast. And I look at Lenny and I go, I don't really feel like going home yet. Want to get another hotel? And Lenny goes... Yes, I do. So we go to Hotel Chicago, and we get a room. And this is the hotel that's right next to House of Blues on Dearborn.
Uh-huh.
We get a room. It's really nice. And we spent like 20 minutes in it. And what I mean by that is we partied so hard Saturday from like 3 to 8:30 a.m. we got back. Then we went to brunch Sunday. So we literally came back to the room just to pick up Mikey's corpse, Terzo's corpse that was in bed. And because Lenny and I went Saturday. Well, first we went to Prosecco for dinner. It was me, Chucky, Joey, I, and Mikey. Great food. If you got a chance to go to Prosecco, go. It's fantastic. Italian food. I had wild boar ragu.
Oh, sounds good.
With pappardelle. Yeah. We had, all sorts of things. They had a ricotta cheesecake.
Oh, I love ricotta.
I wanted to drop my mic.
I love ricotta.
I wanted to drop my mic like I just told a really great joke right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how good it was. It was like, oh, even my Johnny Walker Black there. Let me tell you something. I don't even believe it was Johnny Walker Black. It was that good. They put in one of those, like, really big ice cubes, like the one ice cube.
Oh, the one giant ice cube, yeah.
And it's perfect because it doesn't water it down or anything.
Right.
Like, they know how to pour scotch at the joint.
Right.
That's how you know you're at a winner, when they know how to pour scotch.
Right.
So we go there. Afterwards, we go to the Godfrey Hotel, and we go to the rooftop bar. We sit outside a little bit because it's 53 degrees or so. That was nice. That was a good time. Then we go to the Mid. We're 30.
That's my stomping ground.
One. Yeah, we're 30. The Mid?
No, that,
oh,
that
the area.
Area.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Halsted, right
Fulton
over there.
And
yeah,
Halsted,
right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was going to say, you're at the Mid?
No.
By the way, this is 2 weeks in a row we were at the Mid.
I don't know
how this happened.
Yeah, someone was going to drag me there 2 weeks ago because Skrillex was there, and he's a big deal, apparently.
Yeah, he is. We got two bottles last week, and everyone, and I guess we had a bottle left over. So everyone goes back to the Mid this week. Where we do that bottle and we do another bottle on top of that.
Fucking bottle service kills you, those places.
I didn't pay for it.
Okay.
And I mean, these guys are snorting. None of my friends, but people we were with snorting lines. Like, fucking, it was like
this Marty 70s. I keep hearing so much about.
It was like the 70s.
Wow.
And so we go.
Where were you doing this? In the bathroom?
No. Oh, no. You're hoping these people would have a sense of like privacy. To
oh
this.
Wow!
Oh, no,
so
no,
unbelievably
no.
Crazy.
No. They're assholes. And then we end up going to an after party after the Mid at like 3 a.m. Mikey at 1:30. Terzo's like, hey, I can't handle this anymore. I'm going back to the room. So two nights in a row, Mikey goes back at 1 and goes to sleep because he's an adult.
Yeah.
Lenny and I are out till 8:30 a.m. with Chucky and Alex. We drag them to Wildberry at 8:30 because they open their 7:30. They open their doors at 7:30.
Oh, you went straight there.
Wildberry Cafe.
That's when your brainwaves start to become irregular.
Well, we looked at our watches at like 7 and we're like, Wildberry? Yeah, Wildberry. And we go Wildberry and we have breakfast. And we stand outside the door from like 7:20 staring at the girls inside being like, open 10 minutes early. And they're like, we're not opening. It's not happening. We're like, yes, it is. And they hated us. We ate. We go back to the room. Terzo's wide awake. He's like, I got no sleep. I'm like, Terzo, you had this big room all to yourself because no one else came back to sleep tonight. You could have jerked off 28 times, slept like a baby.
Yeah, taking a bath.
And you got no sleep? He goes, yeah, I got no sleep. Okay. So they're all like, you're stuck with Terzo. Have fun. So everyone goes home. Lenny has a birthday party for one of our friends to go to, his kids, at noon. One of those kiddie parties, like a one-year-old.
Oh, great.
Reeking of booze, sweating of cigarettes. He's like, if I pick up someone's child, I'm going to be shaking. Like, he had the booze shakes.
Oh, God.
And he had the meat sweats. He had it all going on. And he's picking up children at noon. One-year-olds.
I would not want my children around him.
Mikey, of course, doesn't give a shit that I already had brunch, so he decides he has to get brunch at Sienna Tavern, and I have to watch him eat for an hour.
Oh, no.
Then I'm like, all right, I'm ready to pass out. This weekend's been too much. I got to go home. I spent $600 at least this weekend. I got to go home, pass out for like a day. Terzo goes, want to go see a movie? Yeah, we're going to go see Horrible Bosses, too. Which was horrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Typical Jason Bateman. I love Jason Bateman to death. His movies are no good.
Bad, yeah.
I did enjoy Bad Words. I mean, there's a couple Jason Bateman movies that I enjoy.
I enjoyed Bad Words.
For the most part, Jason Bateman's movies do not live up to Jason Bateman's talent. So I had to see Horrible Bosses too, and that was the weekend. And now we're at the 7:30 p.m. mark, and we can play the Paul Wesley interview.
Wow.
It took a half hour to tell my weekend.
Jesus, what a story.
And I can't even tell everything because I don't want to throw people under the bus for drug usage and prostitution and hookerage.
Oh, there was – really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, hotel rooms, I'd imagine, but like
– it was a rough weekend. Rough. I mean, crazy. Fun.
You do this thing that my friends do.
I got a John Varvatos shirt for $48 because it was on clearance at Bloomie's.
And you got all your Christmas shopping finished, I'm sure.
Lenny and I did the typical bought shit for us and then forgot to buy shit for anybody else.
Oh, my God. That's...
I got a new pair of gloves. What? I got a new shirt, a new Varvatos. I got a new tracksuit.
Okay.
Oh, the tracksuit is...
I've never owned a tracksuit in my life.
When you see my tracksuit, you'll be like...
Should I get one?
Where do I get one of those?
Okay.
And I'll be like, I know a place.
Okay. I'm kind of a greaseball. I should get a tracksuit.
Oh, especially when you see this one. You'll be like, all right, that'll work on you. And you know what I see you in? Don't get a black one.
Yeah.
That's Lenny. He's boring and black. Don't get a white one because those stain easy.
Yeah.
And you look like a... You look like a mook when you wear a
mook,
white
tracksuit. A mook, yeah. I was just going to say.
You really do. What I would do if I were you.
Like a Mezza Fanuc.
You would look really good. If you want to be ballsy, all right, if you want to be like simple, casual, get a blue one.
Okay.
Like a dark blue.
Yeah, I like that.
A royal blue, kind of.
All right.
Now that you would look like classy in. If you want to like really like spock it up a little, I would put you in like a lime green or a brown.
Tracksuit?
Yeah.
Okay.
The brown is possible.
I love brown.
It'd have to be a nice fitting brown, though. Not like a baggy brown where
you look like
a big, huge piece of shit.
Yeah, right.
Literally.
Yeah, right.
It had to be like a slim fit brown. But the lime green, I'm saying, because it may just pop a little.
Okay.
So if you're ballsy, that's what you go with. But honestly, with you, I'd start you in a simple royal blue.
Okay.
Royal blue tracksuit.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, listen, Terzo can't wear them. So someone's got to.
Someone's got to, yeah.
He doesn't fit in tracksuits. They make those for fat Italians.
Well, that yeah.
And he doesn't
and he
fit
doesn't
in one.
Fit.
Well, he told me he's up to
never been at the track in his life.
I think he's up to 435.
Oh, my God. Jesus. That's, oh, man, he's getting there. He's,
yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I love him, but like 435, you can't fit in a tracksuit.
In a tracksuit made for your people,
yeah,
for
no.
your size.
Yeah, no, they make two kinds of tracksuits, for Ethiopian runners.
Yeah.
And for
people
fat
who go
Italians.
To the track, yeah.
For fat Western or Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, for people who, for kind of people who go to the track where you place a bet, that track.
Right. Do you think people wear a lot of tracksuits in Greece and Italy?
I think they do.
I think they do, too.
Yeah.
I bet they're big sellers over there.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
All right, let's do this Paul Wesley interview. We'll come back. We can talk more
Italy
about
more
everything.
Than Greece, though. Okay.
I could see it Italy and more. So
hold on. Lime, green, royal, blue with an asterisk.
I'm not crazy, though, about thinking about, like, I just want to know how similar Greece and Italy are, because the problem is I went to both of them separately.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of want to do it like back to back now. I want to do like a week in Italy, a week in Greece.
To get the
like
stark contrast.
See,
of, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know what Greek people love to tell me? And I'm talking about off the boat Greek people in America.
Uh-huh.
They love to walk up to us at Richards or wherever. We didn't even go to Richards this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That should tell you how crazy the weekend was.
Wasn't in the cards.
We didn't even. Well, Saturday night at Richards, someone got shot across the street at Funky Buddha.
Ugh.
Shockingly.
Yeah, shockingly.
Greek people love walking up to me. And first of all, Greek people that are off the boat love Chicago Italians.
Yes.
They love them.
They do.
They love them. And they love
I work
telling
with these
you.
People. They love,
love telling you, we're the same. Same thing.
Yeah.
You'll be like, well, you know, in Naples. And they'll be like, same thing.
Right.
And you're like, oh, all right, same thing. So I just want to see how much same thing is.
Yeah.
Because they all claim it's same thing.
Which is funny because, you know, they don't even believe that I'm Greek. They think that I am, as they say, ovre.
What's that? What's
Jewish?
Ovre?
Jewish.
You and I get that a lot.
And I tell them.
You and I get that a lot. I like to think it's the last name.
This guy I work with doesn't believe that I'm Greek. He met my dad. He doesn't believe it. My dad looks as Greek as it comes.
Yeah, no, you're Greek.
Yeah.
No, I don't even think you look Jewish at all.
I get that all the time.
Maybe it's you don't have that olive skin so much. That's what it is.
Okay.
So I think they're just like throwing it out there. Well, you don't have the olive skin, Jew.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But you got a little schnoz.
I got a little bit, yeah.
All
right.
Yeah, I don't get that, though. I wouldn't peg you for anything other than that, though.
Okay.
By the way, when we come back, let's deconstruct how cheap Chucky is.
Yeah.
Because Lee and I, before we were talking, before we got on the air, I was talking about how much money we all spent. And I got to Chucky in my head, and I go, how much money did Chucky spend? And I'm like, I don't think that asshole spent that much. Because I didn't hear him bitch about money once. And if you want to hear anyone bitch about money, it'll be Chucky.
Yeah.
So then I started thinking about how he never put his hand in his pockets once. I ordered every Uber this weekend, and we had to take a black car everywhere.
Okay.
So I spent at least $150 in Uber.
Okay. That all right.
And not one time did someone else reach into their Uber pocket.
I would not. I don't have that kind of money to hang out, but I wouldn't be like accepting drinks. I would accept one or two
right.
drinks, but I wouldn't be accepting
well,
drinks the whole
I'm
weekend.
Like, that's why I'm like.
I would just not
we
drink
really
anything.
We really can't invite out Lee because he's just going to stare at all of us.
I would.
And I'd feel really shitty.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
Because that's the thing. The bottle service wasn't on us. Like, we didn't pay for it.
Uh-huh.
The people we were partying with paid for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they had the blow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well. Both days. There was two different. There was different cocaine both days.
Mm-hmm.
There was ecstasy there a lot, too.
Okay.
There was rolling going on.
Good.
Not for me.
No. Ecstasy, I'm done with it.
I think I was offered it. I think if it wasn't noon, my answer would have taken a little longer to give.
Yeah.
But at noon, you're just kind of like, you know, I don't really need a roll. It's the cleanest roll you'll ever do.
Yeah. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm sure. It's noon. Yeah, I'm at Michael Jordan's.
Yeah.
The only person that should be rolling at noon at Michael Jordan's is Michael Jordan.
Yeah, really.
All right, Paul Wesley's our guest. Paul Wesley, of course, from Vampire Diaries and the new film, Before I Disappear, which is on IFC. Which is an IFC film, which is on VOD right now, iTunes, and in select theaters. I suggest watching this film. speaking of drugs. See, we're all thematic on this show, and it's definitely a movie you should see. I think you'll enjoy it. Lee, I definitely think you would enjoy it. I think Pat sent you a screener, actually, so you can watch it for free.
Okay, great.
If he didn't send it to you, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I don't know if I've gotten it.
Because I think it's definitely up your alley, and I'm kind of looking for your response on... I kind of want to hear your critique on it, but I also want to see what you think of Paul Wesley, because I think he's a great actor.
Okay.
I mean, I watch Vampire Diaries, so I feel like... Oh, by the way, Lenny and I are in the liquor lab, which I don't think I'm allowed to talk about on the phone.
Okay.
Or I'm on the show. We'll talk about that when I get back. We'll talk about all this when I get back. Here, let's just get to Paul Wesley. He's been waiting patiently in the lobby of the Waldorf Astoria for us. And here is, we should do a show from the Waldorf.
That would be
great. Rent a room and do it,
and
though.
Do it when,
and
when
be the, like, there's nothing they could do about
it. At the bar and when that bartender is there.
He's a prick, I hear.
Yeah.
I heard.
Oh, yeah.
I would know.
I would expect that.
All right, here's Paul Wesley. I really am excited about Before I Disappear, because I wanted to talk to you about Paul, like, right out of the gate. And if you don't mind, let's start recording now. Is that cool? Okay. You are producing this film as well, correct?
Yeah. I actually originally just came on as a producer and nothing else.
Can we talk about how you got involved with producing, like where producing film like came for you? Because everyone, of course, knows you from Vampire Diaries, and you're great on the show. And I want to talk a little bit about that as well, because I'm a big fan of the show, actually.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, but we're talking Before I Disappear here, and we're talking New York independent filmmaking, and I just did an independent film in Chicago, and I'm inspired by all these New York independent films, these Sidney Lumet films, these Ed Burns, Woody Allen films in the 70s, 80s, 90s. What got you involved with producing this project? And then I saw that you're going to continue producing films while acting, so obviously you dug it. What is it about you that decided producer?
Well, man, you know, when you're doing a show like Vampire Diaries, which I'm very grateful for, and it's great, you know, 22 episodes a year, which is a lot. It's not a cable show. So you really don't have much time to do anything other than do this particular series. And I shoot the show in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's really hard to sort of do anything other than really just work on this TV series. So there's a lot of idle time on set. And, you know, Sean Christensen, the director of Before I Despair and the writer, is a dear friend of mine. I've known him for 15 years. And we just frequently talk about, you know, whatever film, and, you know, we're just buddies. And Sean had just written this big sort of studio blockbuster movie, and I don't want to speak for him, but he kind of was not very happy with the result. And I had been going into season 5 of Vampire Diaries, and I'm like, man, and I've been doing this show for half a decade, you know, I'd love to just sort of do something different. And Sean is like, I want to do something different too. He did Curb to the Short on his own and won an Oscar for it. But before he even won an Oscar, he said, hey, I did this little short Curb to you. It's not out yet, but maybe you and I can just like have fun and shoot it in New York and expand it into a feature. And so we did that, and at first it was just a hypothetical, but then once the short won an Oscar, we were like, oh, and suddenly this fellow from Dubai came and approached us and said, I'll give you this amount of money. It was a very minor amount of money in comparison to what films are made for, but we were like, yeah, sure. So we just like, it kind of just happened organically, you know? We didn't really make a big deal out of it. We shot in like 19 days, and screenplay. Sean said, "Hey, what about writing a character like Gideon?" And you know, and he said, "Which will you play him?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, great, why not?" And so it all just kind of fell together, man. It kind of just fell together. But for me, there's a lot of, I guess, my long-winded response is that there's a lot of idle time on set of Vampire Diaries, and well, there's a lot of time where you can sit, and the idle mind is a devil's playground. Rather than sit there and you know, play video games, which, you know, I try to come up with some ideas and things that I can do on the hiatus, and this was one of them.
No, I think it's great because, I mean, it's always cool to keep creating. And, Sean, for people that aren't aware, you're talking to Sean Christensen, who also stars in the film. And you're in the film as well. And, you know, he's just a really talented dude. I think this is so cool that really from what I'm hearing is you just got passionate about a project with a good friend of yours. And you're like, let's just go make it, which is independent filmmaking to its core. You talk about that this is a low budget production. Now, there are different kinds of low budget. There's Lena Dunham and the Duplass brothers and Joe Swanberg and their $5,000 to $40,000 films. Now, this is a film that looks outstanding. Now, obviously, with you involved as a producer, we can get you at a cut rate and all these things. But what was the idea of a budget on this? Could you give us an idea?
I mean, it was definitely under $1 million. I'll tell you that much.
Really?
It was
okay.
It was well under.
Right.
I mean?
Right. No. No. I totally get that. But the reason I ask is not to be a nosy Nancy here, but I ask because I just did a film and you know it looks so great, man. Before I Disappear does not look like any kind of cut rate production at all. It looks fantastic. Just so you know, I wanted to tell you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the hardest thing with Before I Disappear was shooting it in 19 days. And also, the other thing that was really hard was having shooting it in 19 days and also having no time for. We basically had these stipulations where we had to shoot in July. If we didn't shoot by July, we didn't have a script till May. It was impossible to. The biggest problem with Before I Disappear was that we didn't have enough prep time, we didn't have enough post time, we didn't have enough shooting time. The money is fine, but also there's all these rules, there's these union rules, and you can only, it's hard. Like when you shoot a movie for, say, $50,000, Curfew, the short film, it looks stunning, and Sean's. You can do that whenever you want. You can take your time. You can shoot it for 4 months. You shoot a day here, a day there. Ask a buddy to do a favor. You can sit in the editing room for a year. You can you can really just kind of play and do whatever you want. But then when you have people to answer to, it's a different story. You kind of have to. You have timelines. You have deadlines. You have submission deadlines. You have all these different things, and it's a whole different ballgame. It's just kind of weird. Like purgatory between independent filmmaking and studio. It's this kind of in between where you're sort of confined to the parameters of studio filmmaking, but yet you're still an indie production. You know what I mean?
No. That's totally cool. I totally get that. Let me ask you about, so you're going to keep producing films, right? Okay. Now, what kind of producer do you consider yourself? Because we talk about this on the show all the time. There's guys that go out and get money. There's guys that are there for creative and deal with the studios. In what role do you take on producing?
I guess I'm a bit of both. I'm doing this movie in April with another good friend of mine, this guy Adam Schroeder, who's very, very successful. He's done movies such as Truman Show and Chronicle and Sleepy Hollow. The guy's really, really successful guy. And him and I are, again, buddies. And I found this, he had this script called Convergence that I really fell in love with, the concept. And I knew some people in China that really wanted to work with me because Vampire Diaries is incredibly popular over there. So I was able to sort of bring the two together and create this project that we're going to shoot. But for me on this one, I suppose I blended the finances together. But for me, this is way more of a creative passion than anything else. I mean, the finances it's part of the game, and I get it. And I to be honest with you, I some people hate dealing with money. I don't really mind it. I get it. It's a part of it, and I understand it, and I actually kind of enjoy it. But I guess you could say I'm a bit of both,
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. I consider myself a bit of both as well. And I mean, obviously, too, when it's your project or you're so heavily involved, when it comes to getting money and investors and stuff, you always got to deal with these people, whether you're the guy that's hooking it up or not. So let's talk about Before I Disappear a little bit. What a cast for this movie. You got Sean Christensen as we discussed and yourself. And you have two of my favorite people ever. I should just say three because Emmy Rossum's amazing. But Ron Perlman and Richard Schiff. How do you get two guys like this involved in this project?
It's funny. So Ron Perlman, I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back. That was me. a really good friend of mine, playwright and screenwriter, named Shem Bitterman. He had directed Ron. Ron is a huge independent film guy. He is a huge supporter of independent cinema. Really, really loves young filmmakers that want to do something different. And he's been in these huge blockbusters, but he doesn't care. He's like, for him, independent cinema is like his passion, now that I got to know him. And anyway, he did this independent film called The Job, directed by my friend Shem. And when we got the script for Before I Disappear, we were thinking who would be great for this, and I thought Ron Perlman. So I called Shem, who then called Ron, who was so nice and immediately was like, send me the script. Absolutely. And then he watched the Curfew, the short film, and he was just like, all right, I'm in. He's like, I don't care, I'm in.
Yeah, and so he does some wacky roles, too. And, this is a role that is more, I would say this is more suited for Ron Perlman. Like, I think it's interesting that he was your first choice because I can't think of anyone else that could have done that role.
Yeah, he's the type of guy that you kind of just like, you look at him and you're like, that is Ron Perlman. Like, he cannot be missed. He's so specific. He's just a specific guy. And that's what I love about, I think he just pops on screen, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No one looks like him.
Needed somebody that was pop. There's just no mistaking Ron Perlman.
No, nobody looks like the bro. No one has his voice. Like, Ron Perlman is an entity to himself. You can't write a role for Ron Perlman and go, if we don't get Ron Perlman, we'll get blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to rewrite a role then. You have to rewrite a role if you're not going to get your guy.
What a
great, great actor. I was just impressed with the number of people you got in this film. I think, you got some of the best actors going today. I think that's really awesome because I tell people all the time, and this is where you're going to have to sit down. I tell people all the time, I think you are. And this is no joke, 1,000% I've told people this, because of your mix of dark humor, you're very charismatic, you're not over the top, though. I tell people you remind me of, like, a young George Clooney. Can I tell you something, though? Not a lot of people argue with me about it. They hear my argument, and I don't get argued with them. Listen, there's something about you, dude, where, like, I would love to see you do more comedy. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I just see this in you, that you have this comedic sense. Is that crazy?
I've heard that. And I'll tell you, some of my favorite movies, and, well, first of all, thank you. That's very kind of you, and I don't know what to say.
Right,
I'm not very
sit
good
down.
At thank you very much. Yeah. But comedy is comedy was for me, like, Christopher Guest films are like some of my favorite films.
That's what we just
world,
did,
you know. And
that was my film.
And,
we
I
just
mean,
did
I
a thought, Christopher Guest style film.
I Christopher Guest and dark humor. You know, I love dark humor.
Yep.
I don't know about you, but I found Nightcrawler to be hysterical. I was laughing the whole time.
You know what? That's an interesting way to look at that film. But I'll tell you something. You know who you're perfectly suited for is the Coen brothers. I could see you doing that kind of humor.
Oh man, I would. That'd be amazing. I actually auditioned for their latest movie, Hail Caesar, and I didn't get a response. But those guys are incredible. For me, even slapstick humor, any intelligent humor, you know, in general, regardless of how it's sort of portrayed. Woody Allen films are hysterical. you know, I love Wes Anderson. You know, Royal Tenenbaums is one of my favorites. You know, there's I mean, and I love really dark humor, like, you know, Solon, you know, and,
oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah, man. I would love to listen. I have a, I think another year on the Vampire Diaries, and you know, who knows, man? Maybe I'll get into that, you know, a little more. And I've been hearing that a lot. So thank you for the compliment.
Yeah,
I'll try to take up on that.
No, I think it'd be awesome. And you just talked about Woody Allen, and we talk about Before I Disappear, and we're talking about your love for New York, which we haven't talked about yet. Is there a reason that you want to do more independent filmmaking in New York? What inspires you to do that?
You know, look, it's sort of an idealistic thing. I grew up. My favorite movies are usually, you know, my favorite movies are like old Scorsese, like way back in the day, Scorsese,
yep, Mean
or
Street,
like Kubrick. Yeah, or like Kubrick films, or like the old school Woody Allen, you know, Manhattan and Annie Hall, and like I grew up there. My whole formative years, you know, my eyes were wide open in New York at the age of 15, running around, kind of I was immersed in this mecca of culture. I've lived everywhere in the U.S. and there's just nothing like it. It's an island. It's literally an island, and it's just like I don't know how to. I think everyone says this, but there's just something about New York that I just can't shake. I even watching Birdman made me love it. It's just
if you love the theater too.
I'm sorry.
If you love the theater too, Birdman is just like. Birdman reminds me of, it's just a great theater film. Like, if you really love theater, if you really love acting, that is a great film for you. Anyone in the film business should see that movie. Everything from the acting to the Foley design to the soundtrack. I mean, what a great movie. What I was going to ask you is, you were talking about Martin Scorsese, and we're talking about New York, and I always wonder this because I've never spent a good amount of time in New York, and I'm like, you know, I want to make all my movies in Chicago, but maybe one day I'd make something in New York. Is New York still as crazy as, like, 85 After Hours as Scorsese made? Is there still that element to New York, or is it very corporate now?
It's really changed, man, and it's still amazing, but it's really changed, and, you know, I mean, it's a whole different world now, man. For sure, and you know, Manhattan in particular is really a place that is kind of you know, I mean, it's just a whole different ball game, man. I mean, I don't know much about what happened in politics, but I know Giuliani really cleaned things up, which is great, and I know Bloomberg was like super into like infusing tourism, and I mean, it's really just such a. I remember Alphabet City used to be such a dump, and now it's like in a good way, and now it's like, you know, I can't even get a studio for less than $2,500 a month.
But that's what I'm talking about. You just said like it was a dump in a good way, and there's, as a filmmaker, you're like, oh, I kind of miss that they don't have, like, a stretch of porn theaters on Broadway anymore that I could shoot in the middle of the night when some shady characters... I mean, I was thinking, like, for Before I Disappear, I'm like, oh, man, what if they shot this scene, like, and, you know, the movie has to deal with drugs, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's a film you got to see. But I started seeing it as, like, oh, man, if I shot this in the 70s, you're in Times Square, and there's all these seedy joints, and, like, you know, you know what I'm saying, though, as a filmmaker? Don't you miss that a little bit?
You know, we like to romanticize the idea of, like, New York being this kind of, like, underworld of, like, you know, anything can happen, and anything at any time will happen, and you have to sort of, like, always be on your on the edge, and that's great for filmmaking, but it's not great for life, you know. It's like the client pays down, you know, and you know, and it's you have to sort of look at it pragmatically, you know, but as a filmmaker, it's hard. But look, you can still find these glorious, beautiful, you know, wherever humanity exists, there's going to be darkness. I don't care how corporate Manhattan is, you can still find some really fucked up shit. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse, but you can really find some darkness in Manhattan, you know, and regardless of how pretty it may look on an aesthetic level. So yeah, man, I just did this movie, actually. I shot it like literally a week after Before I Disappear. It's another movie that I hope to talk to you about when it comes out in January through Draft House Films, called Amir and Sam. And I play this Wall Street guy who essentially is caught up in the post 9/11, taking advantage of sort of the, you know, there was really no regulations. There was no regulations on Wall Street. There was basically free money. And this guy was caught up in that world. And that's a really dark, dark place too, you know.
Yeah.
It's completely the opposite of Scorsese After Hours. But I guess what I'm saying is you can find something in any situation.
And by the way, I'd like to ask you, I mean, I'd love to have you back to talk about that, but how'd you get involved with that project then? Because that's another indie.
It's a funny story. So we had this like crappy little like production office in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, which is very much the hipster spot now.
Yeah.
But in any case, for Before I Disappear, we had this crappy little production office, and we were sharing it as our movie was ending. Amir and Sam was going to take over that production office, so there was like a week overlap. And during that week overlap, the director of Amir and Sam, I just met him there, literally as he was kind of just at the production office. And we started chatting, and he knew me from TV, and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "You know, we're just wrapping this movie." And he's like, "Well, hey, do you want to read my script? I'm about to shoot this movie, Amir and Sam." Again, another low-budget independent. And I read it, and I was like, man, this is really charming and beautiful. And he said, you know, it's starring this guy, Martin Starr. And I know Martin from Freaks and Geeks. And I was like, man, this guy's great. And then he showed me the audition tape for the girl who was the lead in it. And she blew me away. Her name is Dina. She's amazing. And so I was like, I'm in, man. And so like literally a week and a half later, I was like on set of Amir and Sam, same locations. Like, it was just such a funny, and that movie came out really beautifully, and it'll be out in January theatrically, and again day and date. And it's you know, it's again, it's a, it, and New York is like a fourth character, you know.
Good.
It's the same thing.
I'm looking forward to that. Last question before I let you go. You've been involved. And actually, I have one fan question. I said I'd pick one of them. Okay, so I will ask you mine, and I'll ask you theirs. Okay, my question is, I think a lot of people don't realize before Vampire Diaries, you had a great run on TV as like either a guest star or as a recurring character. And I remember, and also going through your resume, now you've worked with Richard Dreyfuss, Vincent D'Onofrio. You've worked with, of course you did Everwood for a couple of years. So you and Treat Williams, and then you did, of course, CSI New York, CSI Miami. So Sinise, Caruso, Law and Order, you got Maloney, you got Mariska. Do you have any interesting stories from working with these experienced veterans who just are like these amazing actors that we all look up to?
Well, one thing came to mind, as you were, the last thing you said, I didn't get to know him very well, but this guy, Chris Maloney, who's the star of the SVU or whatever, SVU, Law and Order, it's kind of like every episode of Law and Order, like, this was his episode, this was his kind of like, this was your, you know, because a lot of those procedurals are like, you know, you kind of, it's all about the victim. And whereas, like, this particular episode was about kind of his character. And this was kind of his, in a way, I hate to say it, but like an Emmy sort of calling, like his
sure.
Emmy episode. And by the way, he ended up getting nominated for an Emmy that year. But I remember we were doing this scene, it was a really intense scene where my character had a gun basically in his hand and he was going to shoot himself in the head. Because he was on steroids.
Steroids. You're from the steroids with
shot.
The baseball player.
Yeah,
I remember that episode. The baseball kids. Yeah.
Yeah, he had just shot his father. This guy. What was his name? Noah.
Noah Emmerich. Noah Emmerich. Great actor.
Noah
Emmerich.
Yeah. So he played my father. I had just shot him in the head, and so I was like going to kill myself. Anyway, it's this whole scene, and I remember we did Chris's coverage, and he was, you know, fantastic. And then we went on to my coverage, and I'm just this guest star, and it was a super emotional scene for me, but he was really, really committed on my coverage, like really in it, like almost as if he was like, it was like the camera was on him. And I was like, and I said to him afterwards, I was like, man, I just want to say, you know, thank you for being there for my, on my coverage, you know, thanks for like giving me your all. And he was like, and the one thing he said to me was like, you're only as good as the actor opposite you. Like, wow. You're only as good in the scene as the person that you're working opposite. He's like, what he was saying was that, like, he wanted me to be great because that's the only way that the scene would be great, and that's the only way that his scene would be good.
Right,
and it would work as a whole.
A lot of acting's reacting, and so it's important to always have...
Yeah.
Yeah, when I hear these stories about they brought someone in to, like, double for... I'm like, really? Come on.
Well, but hey, man, I'm telling you, dude, listen, I've been on this show for 6 years, and I'm, you know... Like a lot of, like, you get into these TV habits, you know, it's 22 episodes a year, and you get into these TV habits, you're like, well, it's not my coverage, so I don't have to go 100%, I can go 60%,
yeah,
or I can just,
yeah.
Like, and we're all guilty of it, you know, and to have the, you know, this was, like, what, the guy's seventh or eighth year, and to have the kind of, you know, excitement to give it your all on some, you know, guest stars coverage is pretty commendable, and so I always sort of I try to remember that, you know, I try to remember that story, and I think Al Pacino had a similar story where you know, he was like doing something and they were like, hey Al, save it for your coverage, and he's like, man, I'm not saving anything, this is like, I'm enjoying myself.
That's
like
great.
This is what I do.
That's,
you
what
know?
Being an actor
it's hard to remember that in TV, man.
No, I think that's a great story. I'll give you your softball before I let you go. One of your fans wanted to know, what's your favorite hobby?
My favorite hobby? I mean, if we're really going to just get into, like, hobbies, one of the things I love to do is, I know it sounds really kind of cliche, but I really like to snowboard. It really gets my mind off of things. I love going up into the mountains. And I love just, like, having absolutely no focus other than getting myself down that hill. It's something I've been doing since I was 6 years old. I was on a ski team. And it's, like, something about being in the mountains and the snow, it just really settles me, really calms me down, and probably my favorite hobby.
Man, snowboarding, if I had an actor on a TV show, would scare the shit out of me. If I'm an insurance company or the studio.
I'm actually legally not allowed to,
yep,
snowboard.
I figured.
Like,
I contracted. Yep, I knew it. Dude, I had a feeling. Well, before I disappear, that is an IFC film. It's currently available on iTunes Video On Demand. It's in limited theaters as well. I suggest checking it out any way you can. It's as simple as going to Comcast or whatever service you provide. You go to On Demand, and you will see Before I Disappear. It's a film to absolutely check out. It reminds me of 70s, 80s Marty Scorsese, New York, which is just so fucking cool. And, I mean, you got some really great performances in this movie. Sean Christensen's great. Emmy Rossum. You got some Ron Perlman action. And Paul Wesley, of course. And, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Vampire Diaries is on TV now. It's going to be on at least another year, I believe. What a smoldering hot show. And I cannot wait for you to come back on in the future so we could talk some more.
Hey, man, thank you so much for the kind words. I appreciate it.
Bro, no problem. It's the truth. And I love your passion for independent filmmaking. It's awesome. It's awesome. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. All right, dude. Until next time.
All right. Have a good one, brother. And that was Paul. That was Paul Wesley. Before I Disappear is the film, VOD, on demand, in select theaters right now. You can get it on iTunes as well. It's a great film. I enjoyed it. Love indie filmmaking. This is why I love independent film. I wish independent film got more press than it did. I don't know why it's not like the 90s anymore, where people are like losing their shit over indie film. Well, no, I do know. What happened was, Ain't It Cool News and Joe Blow and all the blogs that started in the 90s, they were started as a way to like promote in the 90s, you would have all these films coming out, like Independence Day and Godzilla and what else came out in the 90s? That was a big deal. Jurassic Park and stuff like that. And you were like, okay. And it wasn't offensive then because you weren't bombarded with just those movies.
Yeah.
But those were the movies that would get the big press. Or it would be whatever the newest Disney kids film is. Those would get the big press.
Right.
And what didn't get the big press was Slackers. Or Suburbia, or
Zero Effect. Maybe.
Yes, Slackers, Suburbia, Zero Effect.
Big Night. Safe by Todd Haynes.
Sure. Those are the films that didn't get the. And what would Dead happen Man. Was you heard about those films on Ain't It Cool News and Joe Blow and all these websites that were just kind of like promoting films that you really didn't know much about. And all of a sudden, they were getting this press. All of a sudden. It was this press that was unprecedented. Then what happened was these blogs started becoming big money makers. And some of them sold out to corporate websites. And some of them are like, we got to keep our numbers up so our advertising dollars go up. Because now I'm making a living off of having a friggin' blog.
Right.
So they stopped talking about indie films. And they started just focusing on comic book movies and big event movies. So now there are no websites that are really popular that are dedicated to independent filmmaking.
It's the same problem there was before. There was
correct.
Yeah,
correct. In order to learn about the films at Sundance every year, you might as well just go to Variety and Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah.
Now, 10 years ago, you would go to Ain't It Cool News and read like Moriarty went to like all 5 of these films or all 10 of these films today, and what are his reviews? Let's read his reviews. And you'd be like, oh, that sounds good. That sounds interesting.
Right.
Oh, I want to see that. You don't have that anymore. The Independent Spirit Awards used to be an award show that were for independent films. And these independent films cost no more than $5 million. Now the limit on an independent film for the Independent Spirit Awards is $20 million. How is my legitimate independent film supposed to compete with Imitation Game?
Right.
How's it supposed to compete?
Right.
Or how's it supposed to compete with St. Vincent's?
Right.
Or how's it supposed to compete with Birdman? Those are $10, $15, $20 million movies.
Yeah.
How's my less than $100,000 movie supposed to compete with them? The only category I even have a shot in at the Independent Spirit Awards is the Cassavetes category.
Right.
Which is under $500,000, I think, or something like that.
Right.
And even then, I'm dealing with heavy competition. So, like, the Independent Spirit Awards now, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You're fucked.
Well, here's what happened since that time. The meaning of the word independent has been changed.
Yeah.
It used to refer to the means by which the people made the film. Now it refers to specific types of films, motifs within the film, the feeling it has, being quirky or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It has no meaning anymore, that word. No meaning.
None.
That's the difference.
And this is... And I'm really actually, I'm bringing this up because it's affecting independent film. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to be hurting making these kind of movies because I'm not going to get any. One, we're not going to get a lot of press.
Right.
Two, not only are we not going to get a lot of press, but we're not going to be able to compete with Tation Game. You can't compete with those movies.
No.
I don't have Benedict Cumberbatch in my movie. I can't afford Benedict Cumberbatch in my movie. I don't know. It just kind of sucks. It really disappoints me. Like, I see this movie Before I Disappear, which was obviously shot for under $1 million. And if it's not for us promoting these things, I don't know who's going to.
Right. I don't hear it.
No.
I look for these things to be talked about, and I don't hear them.
Yep. So please go see Before I Disappear. Please go see an independent film, period.
Yeah.
Even Whiplash was a $2 or $3 million movie.
Yeah, not very much.
Now, back in the day, that would be considered a high-end independent film. Now it's considered a low-end independent film.
A low-end. I saw the movie about...
Because they're like $3 million.
I saw the movie made by Cal Penn about Bhopal. It has Martin Sheen in it.
Yeah.
And that's not even a big deal. I mean, that's a small independent film.
And how much you think that was made for?
Oh, I'd say about $4 million, $5 million.
That's it?
Not much, no.
But still, do you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
Now, if I told you a Todd Haynes movie in the 90s cost $4 million, $5 million, you'd be like, that's not an independent film.
Absolutely.
Now you're like, $4 million, $5 million, it's not a lot of money.
Right. Absolutely.
Right? I mean, what mm-hmm. Todd Haynes film cost $4 to $5 million in the 90s?
What Todd Haynes film could cost $4 to $5
million? I think his first one that cost $4 to $5 million was the one with Dennis Quaid.
That's right. Far From Heaven.
Far From Heaven, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? That was probably, that looks like a $5 million picture.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
Probably not more.
Because of the art design. Not more, though. It's not.
I just remember when movies like The Hours started coming out. That's when this started, where it was like, that's a $15, $20 million movie. And everyone's like, indie movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's another point to this. There's another point to this. Harvey Weinstein is such... All right. Friday afternoon, me and Kimmy Coates are sitting down talking about the Sons of Anarchy finale.
Oh, Series wow.
Finale.
Oh, boy.
Kimmy Coates is back. And...
You can talk to him about...
the upcoming film?
Yeah.
I rewrote the role. You read it. It's for Betsy Brant.
That's right. It's for Betsy Brant now.
I'll find something else for Kim.
Frankie, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
you what... like it like that,
I
though?
Picked... Yeah.
Okay. And I wrote it for Kim. But there was something, like, really badass for me about making it for a woman.
For a woman, yeah.
When have you ever seen a scumbag PI played by a woman?
A woman, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad no one knows about the upcoming film we're working on. That's in private until I post the audio later. But
fuck it.
For those who did not watch Sons of Anarchy last night, I'm not going to spoil it. Three huge characters die. I mean, you know it's the end of the show. It's over. I remember because you just started watching it when Ron Perlman died. I like ruined it for everybody, and I'm like, this was like 3 weeks after he died too. I talked about
I've only it. Seen the first episode, really. So I haven't seen it at all. But I know it's the kind of show where people are going to die. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I say, and I mean this with all due respect. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. All due respect. It's Hillbilly Sopranos. It's not as good as Sopranos. It's like Hillbilly Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that as an insult at all. It's not meant that way. It's just, listen, it's a show about a bunch of white dudes, okay? Hillbilly Sopranos.
Right.
And I know what you're saying. Sopranos is about a bunch of white dudes. Well, those are Italian dudes. We're just going to, it's a little different.
Okay.
We like to consider ourselves our own species.
Yeah.
You notice, though, how Italians don't even... They might as well not even be human.
No.
They're like their own entity.
They are their own entity. They're not... They're a strange breed.
Yeah.
They're like an offshoot of the human race, like a prototype. Like
yeah.
He was testing types, and he's like, well, we'll just put this on the shelf.
Yeah. So what I was going to say, though, is Harvey made so much money off independent film, and Harvey refuses to believe that he's one of the big boys now. Like, he knows he can compete with the big boys. He knows how much money he makes. He knows how much money his production company is worth, his distribution company. But Harvey likes to still consider everything he does to be independent.
Uh-huh.
So Harvey's making these $20, $30, $40 million movies now to compete. But he's still like, oh, no, it's an independent. We're going to put it in the Independent Spirit Awards. And you're like, no, Harvey, you fucked over the independent movement. We have called something else now. I think the independent movement has to be kept for people that are making $0 movies to like $5 million movies,
and
like it used to be.
Well, this is the thing. It depends on nuance, something which industries have a lot of trouble with.
Right.
Like, how was it made? What's the story behind it? What did the person do to get it made?
So what I'm going to say is the movies that cost $5.1 million to $20 million, we're calling them something else now. We might as well call them Harveys. I don't know what we'll call them, but
okay.
They might as well be Harveys.
That's not bad, yeah.
Because listen, I love you. I love Harvey Weinstein. He was so nice to me.
Yeah.
I've seen him out. Listen, he was nice to me when I met him. And even when I didn't meet him and I saw him out at the Four Seasons and he's in total pimp mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that probably look at him and go, what a jackass. But there's me who looks at him and goes, he's Hollywood. He's old school.
Old school.
1980s Hollywood, where you just want... He's like Robert Evans if Robert Evans remained cool.
Yeah.
And So I love Harvey,
yeah,
man.
He's the real thing, and he loves movies.
Yeah, so I'm not bashing him, but it's like, dude, these movies that cost
they're
more than
not,
$5 bucks that
yeah,
you make,
they're not independent.
Yeah,
they're
you're
something
not a
else.
Mom and pop
That's
shop
okay.
anymore.
That's okay. It's just
you named your company Miramax because your mom's name was Mira something.
Mirabelle.
Something like that. And his dad's name was Max. And I'm like, yeah, you're not a mom and pop shop anymore.
Right.
And you see a Miramax film come out now, it's not a Harvey film. His parents' names are on a film that's done by Disney.
Right.
Like, you sold that company for $1 billion. You're not independent anymore. You are, but you're not.
Right.
You're not. And it's like...
That's fine. It's just not
right,
that, yeah.
Right. But it's like, dude, now we got to create this whole new independent film movement.
Well, again, it's like calling a DJ, you know, like they're these like, oh, well, like I'm a musician. What I do is music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. It's not. That like guys who are spinning at clubs... They're not musicians. They're something else. And what they are is not bad. That's not an insult. I'm just saying they're not a musician. It's just something else.
Yep. You're right.
It's not that it's not legitimate.
No, I got nothing to say that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
100%. So I just don't... I feel bad because like when I saw a movie like Tiny Furniture come out or A Teacher come out, it is so... rare that a film like that sneaks. And look, A Teacher, I think the only distribution it got was Hulu.
Yeah.
Now, she ended up getting a TV show, a TV pilot with HBO, which I haven't heard anything. She got a pilot to remake A Teacher with HBO, but no one saw it. We saw it. We loved it.
Yeah.
South by Southwest, it played at, but like there wasn't this big like,
four times in one show? Four times.
It's unbelievable how bad the internet is today. I don't know what's going on.
It's ridiculous.
I don't know what's going on. Ever since I got this new converter, too, ever since I got the new Wi-Fi, we haven't had this problem at all. That happened four times in one show. When this hasn't happened in months. Months.
It's ridiculous.
Because I got a new box. I got it all fixed.
Oh.
This pisses me off.
Yeah.
A lot. Well... All right, I just gotta post the audio later. Yeah, what happened to Bob?
I don't know what did happen to Bob. That's a fucking good question.
Listen, I'm a little curious about Bob right now.
Yeah.
Pat brings up a good point.
Bob, RV ate him and gained his power.
Yeah, I don't know. What the fuck happened to Bob Weinstein?
I don't know.
That's a really. I bet he still helps out though.
Well, I mean,
you know what? I've never met him. I never seen Bob out. I see Harvey.
Harvey goes out.
I've
what?
Met Harvey like three times.
Yeah.
I've never seen him. He's there every night. He pops in for like 30. So for me, it's kind of like, okay, Rubino wants a script. I'll write you a fucking script. I wrote you a 113-page script. That's as legit as it gets.
Yeah.
Okay? And I wrote that in a month.
Yeah.
We're on the third draft. It's only been a month.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind. I didn't even realize it. While I'm working at I'm on a roll in my mind. I'm like, wow, I'm fucking rolling. Let's just keep rolling. Because I really do think that we're only like one draft away from me sending this to actors.
That's good.
Yeah, I do. I think put it up. Cut rate. So what we do is we send this to like the Betsy Brants of the world and the Nick Searcy's and the Kim Coates and those people, and we get them attached. Sarah Chalks, Lauren Millers. I'm giving away all my ingredients here that I want.
Uh-huh.
I don't really care. We send this to those types. And then what we do is we're going to take this to before we take it to investors, or we may do it to investors first, but before we take it to investors, we may take it to indie studios and be like, give us $1 million.
See what happens.
We got a cast.
Yeah.
And it's a marketable cast.
Yeah.
And there's enough roles in this movie to go. You know what I love about this?
You write a lot of parts. That's good.
What's his face? Who am I thinking of? Oh, fuck. Four Weddings and a Funeral. Mike Newell.
Yeah.
It's Mike Newell movies.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
It's dark. It's not, I don't want to say it's, what's the Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, War of the Roses.
No, it's not as dark as Rules of Attraction. No.
Yeah, no, it's not Rules of Attraction dark where you don't even know it's a comedy sometimes.
Right.
But it is definitely a darker comedy. It's, the characters, if not played by sympathetic people or people that people like, are going to come off very jaded and unlikable.
Yeah.
The two leads, Rubino's perfect as one of the leads because you look at him and you never want to hate him because he's this tiny. A gay mouse. You look like a Disney mouse. Like, I want to make Pinocchio with him as, like, a little mouse. No. He looks like one of the mice from, like, Cinderella.
Now,
and you're like, oh.
He looks like he could be Topo Gigio.
Topo Gigio. That's perfect. That's his new nickname. So when Topo plays his character, and he's kind of a dick, but you're okay with it. Now, first of all, bad shit happens to him.
Yeah.
It's my character where bad shit doesn't necessarily happen for a while. It ends up happening. But, like, for a while, I look like a paranoid asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I love about this movie, but what also we have to be careful when we play it is, when we're doing this movie, my character does get fucked with, but he goes from like a 1 to an 11. Like, yeah, so here's what Pat said. He says, go to Indiegogo. Well, we're going to do all of that, but the safe thing to firstly do is go to the studio.
Thanks, Pat.
Because if we can get a distributor out of the gate or a studio attached with a record out of the gate.
We're having a meeting about the movie now, and Pat is
yeah, right.
weighing in.
Yeah, right.
Pat, whose favorite movie is probably Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
Listen, Dean Jones is great.
Well, I now have some free time. I've just started to like have free
four
time.
Four projects. I have no time.
I know.
And
so.
Like, I've gotten the itch lately. I'm like, you know, a good 10 minutes of material. I could still do six strong minutes at the. And by the way, with the little name value I do have, I can get into the Laugh Factory tomorrow. I can be opening for somebody. And I'm like, why am I not? And I'm like,
be out.
I just can't. I don't have time. Because, you know, you're like me, where if you're not going to do it perfectly,
yeah, I don't
want to do it.
No, because I... Because
that means you and I would have to go to open mics for the next 2 months.
Right.
Every night.
I'm going to have to do that.
Every night, Chris Rock style.
Uh-huh.
Like you're doing fucking dingy open mics at fucking Cigars.
Yeah.
Or you're doing it at some bar on a Tuesday night because you have to get out and do 6 minutes, six minutes.
To, yeah.
And by the way, they only give you 2 minutes at most open mics or three. So
yeah.
I'm perfecting 3 minutes 1 month and 3 minutes the next month just to have good 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so much work to be good at comedy.
Yeah.
It's so much work to be good at stand-up.
So much time. So much waiting.
Like, I remember, and I think Lee's really good, and I would see Lee do some open mics, and it was as simple as this. Some of Lee's comedy is kind of obvious, but it's not obvious if he delivers it the right way. Like, a lot of stand-up depends on delivery.
Right.
And the character of the person doing it. Where it's like, oh, we've seen the guy that has told the joke about the guy at a party with a guitar before.
Yeah.
Okay? But the way if Lee's off, it sounds like the usual bit we've heard from other people.
Right.
But when Lee does it, it sounds smart, it's funny, it's, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, there's a perfection to it that, like, if you don't nail, you can go from being great to average.
Yeah, and you always have to be doing it in order to have that.
Right. I always say this, you know how everyone's like, Carlos Mencia stole everyone's bits. True. You know why Carlos Mencia made it? Because he sounded good stealing them.
Right.
I'm not trying to give the guy credit. I'm just saying he had a unique voice. He had a unique style and delivery, and that's why people liked him. And the fact of the matter is, whether he stole bits or not, the guy was a character on stage, and because he perfected the way of stealing those bits, people didn't even notice the difference.
Yeah. Some people, when they found out, didn't care.
The great Robin Williams. Yes, he did a lot of bits that were similar to other people's bits. Could anyone deliver them like Robin Williams? No, and that's why people loved them. I mean, it's just the facts. I mean, that right there for me is the easiest way to tell people the difference in comedy.
It's like, the voice.
Yeah, it's the voice. Yeah. It really is such a huge role. That's, I mean, in Chicago, they'll know we'll never make it, and I don't want to tell them why, is because they're the whitest people I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like, they just sound millicoast. Like, they have good material. And, like, if Anthony Jeselnik was delivering it with that weird rapport, the weird rapport he has, like, what's that cadence that Jeselnik does? He does that. Like, there's pauses and, like, the way he does it, I can't even do it. I'd never do a good Jeselnik because he's good.
Like the Penguin.
Right, he's good. I can't do him. So, but the point being is, like, Jeselnik is the whitest guy ever, but the way he delivers material is really fucking funny.
Yeah.
A lot of these kids that we see at open mics, they have really great material that you should be a comedy writer because you can't deliver it.
You can't deliver it.
And I don't think with your voice you'll ever be able to deliver it where it's as funny as it could be in the hands of Dave Chappelle.
Someone else. Or
who else is great? Or like Paul Rodriguez. Yeah. Because those guys have distinct voices. If I played you Paul Rodriguez right now but didn't... If I played a clip and I didn't tell you who it was, you'd be able to guess it's Paul Rodriguez.
Yeah.
You hear his voice and you're like, Paul Rodriguez. There's no distinguishing... Like, there's no one that does that voice. His own voice. Like, mm-hmm. you're not even confused. Or Richard Pryor. No one's ever going to sound like Richard Pryor.
No.
Ever again.
Yeah.
Ever again. The guy had his own unique voice. Carlin. Right.
Well, the example I always use is comedians who just write one-liners, throwaways, and that's their whole act.
Yeah.
I mean, and some of them, first of all, lots of great comedians can write those. I have a few. Everybody has them. If you're going to make that your whole act, you had better be a character. You had better talk like the people that did get famous doing those jokes. Stephen Wright, Mitch Hedberg, Emo Phillips. You had better be a completely unique character.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're a regular dude doing those, yawn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pat does bring up a good point. If we brought divorcees to the studios, one, they're going to want to rewrite. I'm working with a great studio right now, LD Entertainment. And I got to tell you something. I've worked with their development people on this script that we're doing a pilot for. They've had great notes.
Good.
Put it this way. They've never had a note where I'm like, that's the stupidest fucking thing I ever heard. They've never said, you have to do this note or else we're not doing the show.
Good.
Or it's going to be this way. They've been very flexible, very understanding. Yes, there's horror stories. Yeah, you go to certain companies and they're like, yeah, we're going to do your movie. Okay, here's your money. Here's the rewrites we want.
You can't
do this wedding.
Your main character is a wisecracking lesbian cop.
Right. I don't want to give away anything about the movie. So, for instance, he'll be like, we're going to change this role from being a gay guy to a wisecracking lesbian.
Because
it's just going to be so much funnier that way.
Right.
And I'm going to be like, yeah, but the whole purpose of the movie is it's two guys, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.